Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. A bull market. That's right. We actually are in a bull market. Feels like it, huh? I mean, come on. This doesn't feel like a bull market, or, well, but it is. We're up 20% from the bottom, which is, of course, technically now we are in a bull market. I don't know if it's going to be a very short one, and next week we head down. I don't know. But what I do know is that 20% ago, all of Wall Street, all commentary was absolutely sure that the market was going down. It wasn't going to be going higher, most certainly. It certainly wouldn't be led by growth stocks. No way. Those companies were out of favor. And with interest rates rising, and then you go on and on with all the explanations as to why this happened. 20% is a significant move higher. 20% is, you want that in your portfolio. Nobody wants to go down, but we need the big gains. So when we cap those gains by one, being out of the market and just saying I'm not playing because all the experts told me X, Y, and Z, or whatever it was you read, right? It was not all the experts, because not all of them even babble about what the market's going to do. I don't know what the market's going to do is the only honest answer, but Wall Street's full of babble. And it feels like Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan always have to have an opinion, right? J.P. Morgan was in our office last week. Do you want to hear our opinion? Now, I wasn't being rude, but I said, no. Here's what I know. Last time you were here, you all were sure 3,200 was the price level for the market. We're at 4,200 now. I'm not sure what value that has. 51% of the time, Wall Street consensus is wrong about the direction of the market. A coin flip is better. Is more accurate. So when you think about that, it's really, I actually think this is important to fully understand, not just laugh off, not point fingers and they're so stupid. No, they're wrong. And we spend time asking the question, what do you think about the market, Schwab? What do you think about the market, UBS? What do you think, Merrill Lynch, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, on and on. It just goes on and on. Well, here's what we think, and we're very constructive on blah, blah, blah. They were very constructive on value stocks, energy, coming into this year. The two categories that are, frankly, down for the year. In a substantially up market, growth stocks couldn't do well in a high interest rate environment, we were told. So don't buy up 40% Apple, Google, Netflix, etc. Own down 10% Dow Chemical. That's what we're told with absolute certainty and charts and graphs and great figures out there. And it's not just to put down, it's to understand this. You didn't need to spend 1 minute of time fussing about the market. And you're up 20% from the bottom last fall. That's kind of a big deal. And if you would have followed quotes intensely, I follow the market, man. I listen to this stuff. I'm on it. Then you did very poorly. Very poorly. It's amazing to me that we spend so much time and energy listening to absolutely wrong commentary. Dead wrong. I mean, you're right, then they're wrong. Which one is it? A coin flip is more accurate. It's really not funny. It's an important data point, I believe. Very important for us to understand that you can't predict the future, so stop it. I know you can't really stop it, but you can remind yourself, just like all whatever negative urges you have, whatever anger pops up in your head, and you don't want to be. You try to stop it. Well, you do. You stop it. It doesn't stop it from ever happening again. We have to continually remind ourselves, hey, I'm trying to predict the future. That's unknowable. Don't do that. Now, that's not to be Pollyannish about anything. This is a very difficult environment, in my opinion. I scratch my head every day wondering, why is the market going higher? When we, I don't even need to list everything that's wrong, because all you have to do is open up the paper. You know what's wrong. Complete and sheer incompetence in the administration. Unbelievable. Probably, quite probably, utterly corrupt. Justice Department, FBI, you just go on and on. How do we get this? How do we clear it up? How do we clean it up? I don't know. Hard questions. And with the weakness that this group shows, we have real deal bad guys. China, Russia. Puffing their chest out. So is war a possibility? Is Taiwan in play? Are interest rates ever going to stop going higher? Is inflation going to get under control? It's just, there's a lot, okay? It's a lot. I get it. And the market rolls. Oh, it's only 7 stocks. You know, you've heard that a zillion times. It's always only 7 stocks, by the way. Not 7, maybe it's 20. You get the point. It's not, the market doesn't like equally distribute returns. Oh, it's up 20. Oh, I must be up 20 on every stock I own. No, I guarantee you you're not. Some are up 40, some are up none. That's the way markets always are, but we act like that's the explanation for why I told you to not put money in the market or not leave it there, or why all of our careful predictions are wrong. And it dials back to this. Leave it alone. You don't have to. And you don't have to put to work if things look like they do now. Because guess what? Interest rates are higher now. Corporate bonds, preferred stocks, things that don't go bump in the night, have tremendously high yields now. 6-7%+. And you're not even talking about chasing junk bonds. I know the urge is to just go ahead and put it in a 2-year CD or whatever. Get your 5%. Wrong. When interest rates are inverted like this, 100% of the time, you should actually go longer term, even though you get paid a little bit less. And right now, you don't even have to get paid less in corporate bonds and things like that. It's an interesting time. Lots of bad news, lots of fear, lots of cash on the sidelines and on the balance sheets of corporate America. Interesting time. But they all are. And we try to look at that and guess. Isn't your mind working that way, right? Like, market shouldn't be that high. Maybe it's going to pull back. And I'm going to... Of course, we're trying to predict the unpredictable. Nothing wrong in this environment of now you get paid on cash and low-risk things, something. It's okay to have some for an opportunistic buy later. Here's the problem. When you see that stock you love, let's pretend it's Apple, go down 20%. Wow, that's awesome. Now, first of all, down 20, is that from 200 a share? Is it today's $180 a share? Or what level, right? But it pulls back, and you're excited because now you can go ahead and add to your position at a bargain price or what you perceive to be a bargain price. And it's down for a reason. Things don't look good. The market's upside down right now. Whatever it is, the new iPhone is not as wonderful as everybody thought, blah, blah, blah. Okay? And then you do what? You predict the future from that point. Well, it's probably going to go a little bit lower. It's done what you want it to do, but then you stop and reevaluate, but with the eye towards what's wrong, because there is something wrong, or it wouldn't pull back. It's what we do all the time, and it leads us out of our positions, unless we're really just determined to own the greatest corporations in the world and own them. Just own them. Don't trade them. Got to take a quick break. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our number again, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It is Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. If you prefer email, okay? You know, it's interesting. We hear in this whole time, we hear about the U.S. dollar collapsing. Not true. Not true. I swear every other ad when I get in the car and I'm listening to Sirius, and it's it doesn't matter if it's on the Fox News, it's on the CNBC. It probably matters a little bit, honestly. Apparently, Fox News listeners, conservatives, if you will, are gold bugs, fear mongers, because that's what seems to run all the time outside of my pillow. All the time. And when I listen to the radio, all the time on this channel. Hey, buy an equity indexed annuity. Hey, buy gold. The dollar's collapsing. What's in your safe? Says the washed up B actor, like I would care what's in his safe. Like, that is an important point, is that a former actor, spokesperson guy likes gold. Oh, well, boy, I should, I guess. That's some expertise for you. Fear sells. Always. Always, always, always. Always. And when you have these things, I told you this last week, but these like equity indexed annuities that can't work because they cap your returns. And I don't know sometimes what the functioning mechanism is to cause it not to work, whether it's, you know, 5% internal fee every year. I've seen those. There's all kinds of things that make it not work. But all of that is ignored in the picture. And believe this, I can't believe this, but, you know, they pay a 10% commission, but all you hear all the time is, oh, you don't want to be paying fees. You know, you don't want to pay 0.5% per year to your advisor, good Lord, to do an honest whole picture, you pay me 10% up front. Like, that's not a fee. And then I do nothing after that. That's called fear selling. We ignore all that's going on because we get caught in so much fear. All the time. All the time. And then the market just goes up, defying everybody, defying your own eyes. And it does it all the time. Then it fades a little bit. And then people point at the bad news. This is why. And then they sell more advertisements. And it's really quite sad. I don't know what it is. And whether it's somebody super smart like Ben Shapiro pitching gold, baloney. They pay him. He's a smart guy. He talks about the markets. He talks about all kinds of stuff. Super smart kid. Fear. Fear. And for whatever reason, conservatives are more fearful, I guess. I don't see this running on mainstream TV. Do you? Do you see the constant gold pitches? I don't. I don't see it at all. But it's that fear, that constant fear, and we're trying to figure out things we just can't figure out. So don't. Don't. Just own the great corporations of the world. If you just own Google and Apple and Amazon, they go down a lot sometimes. So what? They go up even more most of the time. And that's the truth. As companies that are on the cutting edge, the companies that are leading in technology and moving forward, those are American corporations. And I'm going to talk more about that in the next hour because we often talk about these things like buy value, international, so on. But we'll be back right after Fox News. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only, and we're not here to tell you to buy, and sell. That is absurd. It's not just, quotes, entertainment. It's wrong direction. It's noise. We don't want to do that. We want to try to think things through a little bit. You know, I'm often put in this, you know, you're wildly bullish category, and it's like, no, I'm not. I'm not wildly bullish at all. I'm wildly optimistic about the future, and I'm wildly scared at times about the future. Like now. The world's upside down. It's completely upside down. Boys aren't boys necessarily anymore. We talk about it like it's normal. It's not normal. It's not normal to have surgery or things like that on children. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't care what your feelings are. Grow up and then do what you want. But then you at least have a chance to understand that, what is it, 5 years out, 5 or 7 years out, that the chances are you'll kill yourself. Does a 10-year-old understand that? A 12-year-old understand that? No, of course not. This is weird. But this is like actual discussion we have in a country, not talking about what's going to happen with China. Not talking about inflation. Not talking about the deficit. Not talking about entitlement programs. All of these things. It's upside down. Serious people aren't. People are paid zillions of dollars to be what, like influencers. I mean, it's weird not to actually have a job. Not to actually interact with people. It's just weird. And we have to come into that and go, yeah, it's okay to own stocks of the great corporations of the world. And I want to talk about that a little bit. We need to understand that what our eyes, our lying eyes before us see, isn't the reality of what's going on in corporate world. It's just not. And we talk often about diversification and, you know, we want small caps and versus large and growth versus value. And this sector looks really, really good. And so on. And oftentimes by doing that, we get ourselves in the, kind of in this box of like, I don't want to own that right now. Why do you think you know any better than anybody else? Why is the price of that company wrong? You don't want to own it, but it's traded every day. And the wisdom of the universe, the collective, us, says the price is $50 a share, but you're sure it's not. Why? You think it ought to be less because you read the newspaper and it's a depressing story of whatever, okay? That's what we do all the time. And if it goes up, then the reality is we turn into, I think his name was Schiff, somebody like that who says, the reason why I've been wrong, because he was asked why gold wasn't at 3,000 or 5,000, this goes back like 10 years, maybe longer. And he goes, well, it's because people are so stupid, they don't really know what's going on. It's like, oh, okay. It's not you. It's the collective, man. You're not. You're super smart. You are so smart. You see things that the rest of us don't, but they don't actually occur. Okay. Blame people's stupidity. But we have to separate the two. And we have to sometimes quit slicing, dicing things to this infinite degree or just kind of put it on pause. So let me tell you what I've been thinking about a lot lately. I mean a lot. I've shared with you this the stunning thought process that I thought was Warren Buffett's recent chatter. So I'll just quickly go through that. I spent a lot of time on that. He has a dozen decisions that he says are account for almost all of the returns for his funds. And two of them were personnel decisions. So 10 investment decisions. That's it. And I go, Apple, Google, Amazon. I don't need a lot of those. I don't need a lot of those any more than Warren Buffett does. Interesting. Owning the great corporations of the world, like the S&P, it's all I need to do. Own. Keep. Don't trade. Relax. Watch your dividends, meaning income, grow at 3 times the rate of inflation for the last 50 years. Like no other asset. I'm talking income, not capital appreciation. Income. In my pocket. Go to the bank. Spend it. Income. For doing nothing. This is all you have to do. The greatest investor has 10 decisions. It's amazing. Okay? All right. Turn the page. And what I've been thinking about a lot lately is not, is the market too high? What could we do here? What should we do there? Yes, there's some of that going on, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about real thought. Like, why am I diversifying? What do I mean by that? Well, of course you diversify. You own different stocks. But why don't I just own stocks? Well, that's an interesting question. Why don't I? They perform better than anything else. They kick off more income. The income grows faster than the rate of inflation. Why not? Now, I know Amazon and Google don't pay a dividend. But Microsoft and Apple do. And so do lots of companies called the S&P 500. Anyway, I've been thinking about this. So, and why am I thinking small cap versus large cap? But what does that gain? How's that do? How about growth versus value? Should I be like trying to lean into value? Or growth has outperformed in virtually every period. I suppose you could find some time, some, you know, 2-year period, you know, in the 90s. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like you can slice and dice it, but when you go back like last year and then everybody said, this is it, we're turning. It's all going to be small caps and value now. And then it's like, it's over. Now it's all growth and it's all large cap. Just like that, lights out, boom, off. That's it. So I've been thinking about this a lot. So help me think this through. This is fun for me. I'm trying to understand why, for example, would I ever own a foreign stock? I mean, you have to understand, I grew up in this industry, diversification, international, U.S., small cap, large, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, and you can have a 4% cost of living adjusted income all the days of your life with 90% certainty. And then we go into a zero interest rate environment and we have to ask everything. We have to turn it on its head. And you know what? Wall Street won't, because that's the way we grew up. This is what we do. This is, whoa, no, it's 60-40. But the 40 is earning zero. What are you talking about?
Well, you know, it's 60-40 because that's what we teach. Don't bother me with facts.
I'm serious. This was honest dialogue for like 10 years. I'd go off to a conference and be like, I don't even want to have dinner with these people. I can't even get them to acknowledge that 40% of the portfolio earning 1% in treasuries is okay to pay out 4%. A third grader knows that won't work. And these experts, it's difficult. Right? It's just sometimes it's just we do that and we get locked in because this is what I know. And I sound really expert because I say it every day. And it's not true. And so I'm sitting around looking at this and looking at this going, why do I own international stock? Why emerging markets? I owned emerging markets successfully for a long time and then unsuccessfully for a long time too. And I sit back and I go, why would I ever want to invest in China? Ever? Well, if they changed, but they're not. And when I look at the numbers and I think, why would I want to be in Europe? They're dinosaurs. It's the greatest outdoor museum in the world. And they even have people moving around. So it's like active. But they don't do anything. They don't create anything. Oh, well, what about Siemens and Bayer and all? Yeah, they're giant chemical companies like Dow and stuff like that. What does that do? It's the same in the U.S. We have giant industries that don't do much. They don't grow much. Fine companies, right? But subpar returns. So do I really want value? Value meaning companies that aren't doing very well, but they pay dividends, and someday hopefully they'll jump. And that would be like airlines, automobiles, chemical companies, steel companies. Awesome. How about financial companies? They're in that bucket too. And so then I wonder if the 3-year, 5-year, 10-year, 20-year, 15-year, 21-year, 30-year returns all are favor growth, at what point am I not going to just be this guy that says, well, I'm a contrarian, you know, I try to get, you know, buy, you know, things that are out of favor. And they stay out of favor. It's just, okay. I've been thinking about this. Is the new diversification just buying the S&P 500? Kind of, sort of is. And we've been talking about that for years. But we still get into the weeds, if you will, of what a efficient frontier is. Like, you own a little bit of this, and you need some alternatives over here and to smooth out the ride and all those things. Well, if we can get over the smoothing out of the ride, wouldn't we want highly liquid, highest returning vehicles that we could own? I would say yeah. Wouldn't you? I mean, let's just pretend you never got to see the price of the S&P 500. You only got to see the income. And it went up at three times the rate of inflation for the last 50 years. Would you be happy with that? Well, of course you would. Because nothing else on the planet has raised your income that fast. Nothing. Nothing. The best piece of real estate on Malibu Beach, high rise in New York City, hasn't come close to those returns. And you can sell any day. And so I'm thinking about this and I'm going, as I hear people explain away that this market rally isn't real because it's confined to only a few stocks. But isn't it always when we look at the numbers? It always is. Interesting. So when we look at our portfolios, and there's reasons to have dividend-paying stocks that are value stocks and all those, very good reasons to have them in there. So I'm not saying you don't diversify there. You only buy growth. But you have to buy growth of the income. And if you do that, you're still dealing with companies that are growing, even if they're not the big growers like Google. Okay? But the gains of the stock market, which are better than anything else on the planet, are always confined to just a few companies. Just a few. Most companies don't perform any better than cash. So when you look at your portfolio and you say, well, why do I own Dow? Well, maybe you own it because of the dividend. And maybe it's not a forever play. Maybe it is at a great value relative to what you can get somewhere else. And you need the income from it. Okay. Maybe you don't own it forever, but maybe it's something to own for a while. And maybe you're wrong. And it doesn't work. Ugh. But isn't that true of most of them you buy? They don't work very well. Doesn't mean they go to zero, but they don't work well. And when we capture that correctly in our minds and say, it's okay. And it's okay to question. Let's just question it. It's okay to question 60-40 portfolio. Or today's, you know, whatever it is, 60, 20, or 30, and 10 or 20 in alts. What is an alt? An alternative to making money most of the time. It just means it moves counter. It's just, it's this pointless, weird exercise that Wall Street goes through all the time. Has forever. I've done this for 40 years. All 40 years, we come up with brand new, low risk, new ways to screw things up and not just own the great corporations of the world. We do. We figure it out. But international has been this thing in my mind lately as this weird mix of why. But you're supposed to. And we have all the people from Wall Street coming in. JP Morgan was in last week. A couple weeks before that, Goldman Sachs was in. It's constant, right? People at First Trust, on and on. We get them in all the time. And they come in, and they are doing what? Well, we think international looks good this year, or we think small cap's going to be really good, or we like industrials this year over whatever. Everybody has an opinion, again. And it's like, but growth seems to always outperform. The U.S. seems to almost always outperform international. Only brief periods of time. Why don't I just own that? Well, right? When interest rates are this and we start carving it up and we figure out a way, once again, to outsmart ourselves, to be clever by half. when the truth is just like right in front of us. Huh. Just owning the great corporations of the world is the highest return vehicle on the planet. Huh. Well, let me see if I can screw that up with complications, right? And we do it over and over again. So I've been thinking about that a lot as to, am I overthinking things? Right? And looking in ways that are really like right in front of me. This is the best return. Well, it is. So quit screwing around with it. When most of the time, if you do anything different than this, it's wrong. It doesn't do as good. It's interesting. I know this time could be different, and it always is, to some degree, different. All right, I got to take a break, and it's time to take your calls at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, or Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO, and thank you for letting me have my therapy, if you will, you know, just to share what's on my mind. Sometimes what's in my heart. I appreciate that. I really do. Really do. Our email address, if you want to send an email, is dave@petsofinancial.net. Got this one in. It's really interesting. It's a little bit longer, so hang tough. It's a great question. Listen to your discussion about the market and inflation with great interest. What is your recommendation about taking money out of mutual funds right now? Got to expense your 30th wedding anniversary is coming up next year. Looking to take out $17,000 for that trip. We've been investing in funds since 94, but all I see is my funds were worth $1 million a year or two, and the value has taken a huge hit since then. We're not living off the funds. We're living off of pensions. Do we leave it alone and let it recover? A fair question. Number one, I think sometimes we see it wrong. And I'll come back to the actual question. But yes, it was worth more before the bear market. That's true. That's true. Not a lot. It's recovered a bit this year, and I'm not sure what, you know, asset class you're in. If it's emerging markets or foreign, it certainly is not, right? It's they're still down. A fair amount. But if you've been invested since 1994, you've made a lot of money, a lot of money. And when we measure as humans from peak to trough, this gives us a wrong impression. Because even now, while it's down from its peak, it's way up. It's way, way up from what we put in, right? Way up. It's not even close. Okay, so back to the question. Absolutely, you've got a nice recovery this year, right? S&P's up 12%. Tech stocks are up, they're approaching 30% now. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's crazy, crazy, meaning the NASDAQ, right? So if you have some growth funds, they're way up. They may still be down from the peak, but they're way up. I wouldn't wait. Now, there's two ways to look at it. You want to just leave it alone? Fine. If you've got a capital gains issue, fine. Don't worry about it. What you should do, though, is stop reinvesting and let the dividends just come out. On a $1 million portfolio, that's going to be more than $17,000 over a year. Okay? So that's one possibility. But let me just go back and say, is there anything wrong with, when I'm thinking about income planning, that $17,000 is the same thing. I need that money, right? Or I need $5,000 a month to live. Whatever it is coming off of that portfolio, we always think of it this way. I want to know that I've got 5 years or more of income without selling a thing. Because then I can sustain through any bear market without selling down. That's how you kill a portfolio, is selling down. So thinking about, I have an expense coming up next year. Fine. Especially since, you know what? You can get 5 or 6% on that money now. Oh, that's not zero. different ballgame. So at the very least, I'd move that over to bonds, something that's a little less volatile, and go ahead and clip your 6% coupons and be happy. And also celebrate the fact that you didn't have to do anything for all those gains. It's really absolutely fine when you know you have expenses coming up. You know, when the objective is income, cost of living adjusted, all the days of your life that you can never outlive, that's the objective. And nothing else matters. So setting it aside, making sure you don't have to sell down, making sure you're as secure as you can possibly be in your objective is brilliant investing. Focus on what is important. You're going to need $17,000. And by the way, congratulations. 30 is a big number. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You know what? I was going to take a break, but let's go to Michael because he's been patient with me babbling on. Michael, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you for the call, Mike.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm up in Salmon, Idaho, visiting and listening to your program. It's a great program, as usual. And you're 60% in stocks, 40% bonds story. That's one of my favorite stories that you tell. When I started investing many years ago, I thought, why would I want to put my money in something that's hardly paying anything when I could invest in stocks, ride the market, and get dividends? So that's just one of my favorite stories of yours, Dave. So
I wanted to thank you
for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad. You know, it's because I've told that story a lot, and sometimes you go, does it resonate with people? Well, thank you for telling me. It did with you, at least.
Very good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. I appreciate it. Have a nice time in Salmon. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're going to have to take a quick break here for Fox News. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. And as I said before, thank you for my therapy session. I just appreciate you letting me think through some of these things. You know, everybody thinks through things in different ways and different places. And I've talked about that before. And you ask yourself the question, when do you do your best thinking? It is a very interesting question to me. And I was asked that question at a conference last year, along with thousands of other people. We were all asked that question. Anyway, and it always comes to mind, right? It's like, oh, well, in the shower, right? Or whatever it is. When I'm on a walk, all those things. And they're true. They pull you away from things. Or it allows your mind to more freely wander. And for me, I ended up at this conference making a major decision, investment decision. One that we rarely do, right? It was kind of an all or none type of decision. Now, I mean, with a small part of a portfolio, it was all or none. But we had to make a decision that day, that at that moment. And I did. And it turned out, in hindsight, it was a phenomenally good decision. But then I was able to reflect on that morning, I was asked that question. And I realized what the answer was. At least one of the answers, because I don't think there is a answer. One of the answers was, I do my best thinking when I'm walking around a conference. Because you get input here, you get input at that meeting, there, and then you're walking around. Thinking. Your thoughts focused. So I do my best thinking about investments at an investment conference. That's kind of sort of normal. But it also dawned on me that, thanks to you, I get to think out loud with you. And I do my best thinking doing that. I'm not always right. But to just be able to just kind of like share my ideas. And you all have been so kind, and I mean this totally sincerely. Imagine if the feedback I got was, you're an idiot. just shut up. If that's the feedback I got all the time, I don't think I'd be thinking out loud with you, right? It allows me to freely express my thoughts. And sometimes I do step on my own tongue and wish I hadn't said something. That's just part of being human, I think, right? You just, you know, when you go ahead and say what's there, you are going to make mistakes sometimes. So I appreciate you putting up with my mistakes, my thinking, my therapy. For 35 years, is it? Oh, my gosh. It's so long. It's so long. It's crazy. It's crazy. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Fred asks, I have found your advice spot on over the years. When I was younger, the goal was growing my investments, but in retirement, it has shifted to cash flow and growing what remains to keep up with inflation. So I wonder if the optimal strategy isn't highly dependent on where you are in life, which is why we need someone else like you. It absolutely is. Fred, thank you. What a great question. Comment, I guess, probably is more appropriate. That's absolutely spot on. And that's what I'm really referring to when I say, if your objective is, which it is for you, cost of living adjusted income all the days of your life that you can't outlive, no matter how long you live. If that's your objective, that is your objective. Nothing else. It's okay to have a subset of, hey, if there's something here or something there. But your laser beam focus should be creating a portfolio that does exactly that. And that portfolio looks different at different times. For the last 15 years, X the last 6 months to a year, okay, we were in a zero interest rate environment. You couldn't own bonds and succeed at that. Wow. I mean, that's quite a statement coming from all of investment world where you're supposed to have 60% stocks and 40% bonds. So it always looks different. It should. If I can optimally get 8%, say, and that achieves all your goals and more, cost of living adjusted, then I think we should have most of our assets in that spot. Maybe it's a bond fund, whatever it is, right? You see what I mean? That, to me, is the fixation. How do we create the best cost of living adjusted income portfolio? That is like the core of what we do. And that's the funnest thing that we do because it's like deadly dangerous. Why is that fun? Because it's so rewarding and it's very interesting and it's ever changing. It's fascinating. And it's really hard to do. So with all of the challenges that brings and the concerns, because it is, when markets are bad, you get concerned for people, not one or two hundreds or thousands of people that rely on you to produce cost of living adjusted income all the days of their life and never run out. But it's like a calling, right? And so that's the objective. That's the laser beam focus. Now, if you're trying to grow assets, there's a multitude of ways of doing that. But the most important thing is to go get growth. Go find growth. And if you have some that are producing income, great, because that'll be reinvested sometimes at lower prices, which escalates your returns in the long run. Dollar cost averaging, all these things that you want to do. So you're absolutely right. As a portfolio enters different periods, it should begin to being changed, transformed into its new role. Maybe not all at once. Maybe it transforms over a period of time, sometimes for tax reasons, sometimes for all kinds of reasons. This area over here is still looks really great. Why do I really want to sell off my Google? Okay, well, you can keep some of that. You know what I mean? But you got to start positioning for income. As an example. Thank you so much. A great question, great comment, I guess. It does depend so much on where we are in life And then we want to focus on that. And if you're young, younger, you have 5 or 10 years or more until you're going to be wanting income from a portfolio. Here's the trick. You need to not even look or care what your results are. You got to learn to do that because it doesn't matter. One lick. Not one lick. You're not taking any money out, so it doesn't matter at all. Not at all. In fact, it's a positive because you're quite probably adding through your 401k, your IRA, your continuing in income, you're adding to your investments at what turns out to be bargain prices. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Why do you freak yourself out about things that don't matter at all? In fact, they're totally contrary to what you ought to be thinking about. When people are growing their assets, they should be hoping for setbacks in the market. Hoping for it. And yeah, I know. You got to change your brain. We all do. I do the same thing. Mark's down. What am I talking about? I'm not even pulling any money out. I'm putting more in all the time. Why don't I want Schwab to fall? Why don't I want my Google to go down and I can buy more? Human nature. I do the same thing. We all do. But it's wrong. Focus on what's in front of you. What is your objective right now? That's all. If your objective is to grow assets, then be happy and put more in and quit thinking about it or overthinking it. Don't be clever by half. Stop doing that. Market's down. Good. Throw money at it. Well, but no comma buts. No buts. Don't do that. Don't say, oh, but maybe it'll go lower. Of course it might go lower. And then throw more at it again. Don't talk yourself out of great investments. Stay on track. All the time. All the time. You get a bargain. If the market's down 10%, a lot of stuff's down 20. Or more. Market's down 20, there's stuff that's down 50. Good stuff that you want to own. Because happenstance. What do you think 22 was about? How about unreal prices on Google, Apple, Amazon? People didn't buy, though. Because it's going down. That's what everybody said. Dish, we overthink it. Anyway, thank you so much. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Take our final break here. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. You know, it's fast. I can't believe how fast today's program's gone. If you missed anything, catch it on our podcast. We get them up almost always on Monday. By Monday morning, office opens. Boom! It's one of the top priorities. Downloading that, getting it out. And I guess we have like 40,000 downloads all over the world. It's so interesting. So for those of you who are listening and some base overseas or something, thank you for serving our country. We all appreciate it very much. And Stay safe. But anyway, those are available if you want at Apple Store, whatever Google's thing is, and also, of course, on our website. And also we have articles, and also you can email us there right at our website, PetsoFinancial.com. All right, enough of that. It is interesting to me as we look at different spots of the market, right? Okay, so we're in a bull market now. It's official, folks. It's official. We're up 20% from the lows. That officially marks a bull market. Congratulations. I know you don't feel like it is, and it doesn't mean you're back to even or up. But 20% ago is a substantial move and incredible when you stop and think about all of the negativity that there is. It's just nonstop. Buy gold. And gold is stuck in its most amazingly opportunistic time that I've seen since the 1980s, we have global disarray, fear, everywhere you look. Even people in this administration don't think the world is at peace, right? Obviously, they don't have a clue what they're doing. And it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse. So gold is a fear thing. The end of the world. End times. Okay? And, oh, yes, the other thing. I almost forgot, right? Gold always goes up with inflation. Hello? We have inflation. Okay, so tell me why, because the currency's strong or it's weak or it's whatever it is, that's the reason why it's not going up. Why isn't gold going up? Why is it stuck? I have to ask that question. Maybe people are getting smart. That a pretty brick that doesn't do anything is really not worth much in your investment portfolio. Could be. Could be. Doesn't seem to... like it to me. So as we get in this environment where there's so much fear, it's palpable, gold ought to be doing well, and it's not. Where there's so much fear, it's palpable, right? Stocks ought to be cratering, and they're not. When we take everything and we try to think of it in some linear fashion, A plus B equals C. Okay, that's fine. But what if it doesn't, like, ever do that? What if it's always not something you can put on a spreadsheet? Well, these stocks are cheap. I sat there last summer, watched a great presentation in front of our clients and at lunch the same day. Very smart. Not trying to make fun of them. J.P. Morgan. How the S&P had to be at 3,200. Because at 16.5 times earnings, and this was our projection for earnings, which of course is wrong. I mean, everybody's wrong on earnings. It's not even possible to know what the companies are going to earn over the next year. So they're always wrong by some magnitude, usually greatly. So again, there's no point. But let's say they nail the exact number, the hardest thing in the whole wide world to nail. But they nail it. And multiply it by 16.5, and that's the average PE over the last 50 years. That doesn't tell us anything. But they act like it is. And this is at the highest levels of thought. This is, I go around the country, my job is to tell everybody what the right level of the market is. That's what I do. I communicate this every single day. And every day, we're wrong. By some magnitude. Usually greatly. And that's what I do. But people want to hear that constantly. It's amazing. So when we think about this, we want to put it in a spreadsheet. It's 16 times earnings, and when we discount this, and then when we add in the interest rate, and interest rates are higher, so the P.E. ratio needs to be lower. But we're not. We're at 4,200. We're not at 3,200. Huh? That's a big difference. We don't have to know that. And when we think about A plus B is, we don't know. Isn't that great? It really is, because then we can stop trying to overthink it. We can. We truly can. We don't have to spend all of our time, waste all of our time, trying to know the unknowable. Just own the great corporations of the world. Put them away. Go spend your dividends. And collectively, they've gone up 3 times the rate of inflation, 9% a year. For 50 years. That's pretty good stuff. I hope you all have a great rest of the weekend.